Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I was taking a bath long about a Saturday night. Yeah. Rubbed up just relaxing.
All right, it's the Savage Nation. Cut down the music. They don't want to hear this. There's a hurricane about to hit the East Coast. The monster hurricane. The first of the season. It's in the Caribbean. It's stirring up a storm of problems. God knows if it'll peter out, you know. But all right, here we go again. North Carolina, Massachusetts, New York City, blah, blah, blah. Like it's the first time in history that it, come September there's a hurricane in the Caribbean. But every year they have to make believe they never heard of it before and that it's caused by global warming, which of course we now know definitively is a fraud. In fact, it's very important for you to know that the shyster behind global warming, at least one of them, we know about Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone crime syndicate. Al Gorleone himself, of course, has scared the whole world with a hysterical screed about we're destroying the earth, carbon dioxide. Well, one of the most important groups of scientists and engineers, in fact, they're called the best scientists and engineers in the world, which was formed in the year 2000, has finished a thorough review of the UN's finding on the meltdown of, for example, the meltdown of the Himalayas, that the ice on the Himalayas was about to melt and disappear. And they found that it was all based upon one hysterical report by one fraudulent scientist in India. Can you believe this? So ClimateGate, the emails from last year, started the ball rolling here. And now we find out that most of it's based on fraud and it's all about money. This is not to say that we're all looking forward to polluting the earth. In fact, I have been trying to save the earth's environment for about 40 years now, more possibly than most of the fake green people have done. Back in 1975, for example, Macmillan published a book of mine that you may not have heard of called Plant a Tree, a Guide to Regreening America. Would you believe it? I'm Michael Savage. What, I'm not supposed to be interested in the environment because I'm a right-winger? You mean the left wing owns the environment? They own nothing. They own nothing. Most of them do nothing for the environment except talk about it. When I was out there saving the environment, most of them weren't even born. I'm also a trained scientist, and I can tell you most of science today is nothing but fraud. 95% of what science is today is nothing but a business for people who don't have the brains or the guts to go into business. They said, oh, the Himalayas were about to melt. And who was the shyster who put it out? Well, you can see his picture on michaelsavage.com. The guy could play a lead role in the chairman of this hysteria, Rajendra Pachuri from New Delhi, as a result of the hysteria that the Himalayas are melting, he was given about a $400,000 to $500,000 grant from the EU, paid for by taxpayers, and about $500,000 by the Carnegie Corp, a well-known left-wing front group. And here it goes anyway. So the scientists have all been exposed for what they are, a tight clique of like-minded bureaucrats who give each other jobs, publish each other's papers, and conspire to shut out any point of view that threatens to derail their gravy train. You would think this would occur only amongst politicians and government functionaries, but in fact, it has been occurring in science for a very long period of time. I can tell you 100 stories about this going back from when I was in science. I saw what was going on, which is a good segue into what I want to do a little bit on the show today. I want to talk about nutrition because it's a field I know a lot about. So if you have a nutrition question for one segment, perhaps, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I mean, this distinguishes me from anybody else in talk radio. In fact, in the history of talk radio, I'm going to read for you now a list of books by Michael Savage, 1972, Earth Medicine, Earth Food, about American Indian foods and medicines. 1972, mind you. I think it is still in print. I'm not sure. I know it was reprinted in 1980. 1975, plant a tree. 1976, I wrote a children's book called Bugs in the Peanut Butter, published by Little Brown, for the kiddies to see what toxins were in their foods even then. Remember, 1976, when most of the fakers in the conservative talk business were either still pinko liberal pot smokers in law school or whatever. Then came Man's Use for Plants, 1976, which, by the way, won an award for outstanding science books for children in 1976, believe it or not. It's true. Then I got interested in beer, and I started brewing beer and traveling to breweries. I wrote The Taster's Guide to Beer, Macmillan, 1977. Then came the heavy-duty nutrition stuff, 1981, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist, Macmillan, 1981. It's actually a very, very good book. There's still some good info in it. In 82, I did The Art of Feeding Children Well, which I've republished as Healing Children Naturally, which is still available on michaelsavage.com. It's a great book. I'd like to save the world from the pain children are put through by the quacks who push drugs on them by reading that book. Nutrition Against Aging, Bantam, published in 83. Secrets of Fijian Medicine, 1983. It's a very important book, little known, not important for you, because it's about the plants of the Fijian Islands that were used by folk healers who I lived with and how they used them in medicine. It was published by a division. It was the first book that the UN ever paid for. Would you believe it to be published? Yes, the UN. And the Fijian government got a grant from the UN to publish the book. It's a wonderful book. It's a great legacy of mine. I'm very proud of it. Getting Off Cocaine was published in 1984. I pioneered nutritional treatment for people hung up on cocaine. It was a very important book. At the time, it's been completely forgotten. 1986, big blast of a book, Maximum Immunity, and Houghton Mifflin published it. It's in six languages and still has some very useful information. It gives you a great, you can't buy any of these books, so I'm not selling them to you. I'm just telling you what I've done as a prelude to what we're going to do today. What did I do? Maximum Immunity, Houghton Mifflin, 1986. Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, 1987, a very important book, 20 years ahead of its time. I was talking about the use of antioxidants in the prevention of the development of Alzheimer's. I also talked at length about neurotoxic metals such as aluminum. Don't underestimate the importance of that information. 1989, The Complete Book of Homeopathy. 1992, The Herbal Bible. Herbs That Heal, 1994. The Antioxidant Cookbook, 1995. The Death of the White Male, 1991. Well, that's more political. Now we get into the political books. The Savage Nation, 2002, and here come the bestsellers. Let's see. The Enemy Within, 2003. Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, 2005. The Political Zoo, 2006. Psychological Nudity, 2008. Banned in Britain, 2009. And, of course, my blockbuster, soon to be published on October 5th, Trickle Up Poverty, which is likely going to be my last book in the whole sequence of nonfiction. It may be my last nonfiction book. I match this to anybody in the history of talk radio. Nobody can match it. No matter what you may hear people saying about me, there's something that they can't take away from me, and they never can. And that's this track record I've just given you. Now I have a question for you. I know many of you are calling about nutrition and such, and I'm going to take your calls for a bit. I told you that Mondays are going to be, I don't know, cars and food and restaurants. Tuesdays we were going to do movies and literature and books and museums. This is a segment, you know what I'm saying? Wednesday we did finance and money. We did it yesterday with Rick Santelli. It was unbelievable. If you missed it, it's on Michael Savage. We have a piece of the interview. Today being Thursday, I'm doing nutrition questions. And Friday, I hope to do readings from the Bible. Again, this is to break up the week. This is to give each day a certain different format and to give me something to look forward to, and perhaps yourself. Because to just do politics, you know, every day for 3 hours a day is very hard on you and very hard on me. There will be politics, believe me, you know. Trust me on that one. Now, I have to have another sip of coffee. I had a bad night. Hold on. Now, let's see, Dr. Savage. You're going to talk about nutrition and you're drinking evil coffee? Yes, my friends, because coffee is one of the finest drinks that that the world has ever seen. And you know who brought coffee to the attention of the Western world? It was the Arabs, incidentally. You don't know this. But they noticed the Africans drinking a liquid derived from, I think they didn't roast them at that time. They were drinking them in, I think it's Ethiopia. Pretty sure Ethiopia, yes. and in the mountains of Ethiopia. And the indigenous people of Ethiopia were drinking this liquid, which stimulated them. And since Muslims are not permitted to drink alcohol, and they needed something to keep them awake during the many prayer sessions during the day, coffee was the perfect solution. And the Arabs actually brought coffee into Europe. You may know the Europeans picked it up from the Arabs at that time, whichever way you want to put it. It's a very interesting story. At some point, I was a student of so-called economic botany, where I studied the history of these things. We can talk about rubber, curare, you name it, but I'd rather talk about nutrition for the day. But here's a question for you on the Savage Nation. If you're interested in this, and I know many of you are, I don't think there's a person who's educated in the United States of America, and I mean self-educated, who does not take vitamins and does not watch their diet. I doubt very much that there's a person with an IQ more than 70 who still eats the way their father ate. I doubt it. I doubt it. I sincerely doubt it. I don't know how you can go around smoking and eating the way they ate and expect to live past the age of 49. So here's a question for you in the middle of all the nutrition stuff. First of all, a caveat. I will not answer medical questions. That's the first rule. I am not a medical doctor. I am a doctor of nutrition from a great university, the University of California at Berkeley. I have two previous master's degrees. I've published widely in the field, but I am not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to diagnose or treat illnesses. If I can answer a generic question about the vitamins, we'll do it, okay? It may not be possible to do this at all. Is there anyone in the house listening to the Savage Nation right now who has a copy of Earth Medicine, Earth Foods in their possession and still refers to it, or any of the other books that I have mentioned? I know many of you know that I wrote these books, and many of you still have these books, but did you know that I am now talking about nutrition for perhaps the first time in my 16-year career on radio? I'll be right back.
Savage.
What I love is when the libs try to attack me, the salacious, non-productive libs, they say, oh, look, he's a conservative now, but years ago he was just into herbs and nutrition. Like, that's a bad thing? Schmuck? I mean, that's a disgrace to be into herbs and nutrition 30 years ahead of you, you putz, you? Everyone with a brain knows about herbs, herbal medicine and nutrition if they have a brain, you idiot, you. What, do you want it both ways? You think you own the nutrition field? You think you own the environment? I was in this before you were born, most of you. So anyway, let me say this. Please don't call me about medications for male enhancement or nutritional supplements. I don't want to answer that. It's not my specialty. You can try someone else on that one. I can give you some names. Wallbanger might know more about it, or Leprechaun than I. Or hair growth. Not interested. Don't know. No answer. The one paradox I'll never understand, and I'm not the first to ask it, is why nature would make it so that as a man gets older, he loses the hair on his head, but it grows in his nostrils and ears. To this day, I don't understand the biological adaptive reason for that. What, do we get surrounded by more flies who try to get in? I don't understand that. The hair comes off our head, but it grows on the back of our neck like an ape, and then in the ear and in the nostril. But it's off our head. I don't understand that part of it. It's some kind of curse. It is some type of curse, I'm telling you. I think God sometimes needs fun, so he invented man for his own entertainment. And then he gives him all these things happen to him. He gives women beauty when they're young, and then turns the unbelievable with the time and gravity. They have to see themselves waste away in front of their own eyes. There's something perverse about the whole picture, frankly. I don't understand it. Maybe it makes sense somewhere to watch ourselves decay in front of a mirror. So let me read you something. This is the preface to Healing Children Naturally. I want to read it because it's generically important for all discussions of nutrition. Here we go. Just as the undrawn sword is the mark of the best swordsman, so too is the best physician one who relies least on synthetic drugs to heal. That's probably one of the best sentences ever written in the history of nutrition books. And there are very few people left who can even write at all, if they write any of their books to begin with. They wouldn't even understand that sentence. The sad part is that when I wrote this book, there were physicians who used drugs as a last resort. Today, they're used as a first resort. There was a time when doctors knew, doctor, heal thyself. And they also knew, doctor, do no harm. But today, that's all out the window. Today, it's doctor, peddle as many drugs as you can. And I don't even blame them. People come in, They're in the doctor's office. They rarely even look at you. They don't touch you. They look at the chart, and then they give the prescription. They run out 7 minutes later. It's a product of our medical system more than it is the product of the doctors. So let me read the rest of that. Just as the undrawn sword is the mark of the best swordsman, so too is the best physician one who relies least on synthetic drugs to heal. As a nutritionist by training, I have not had to overcome an inherent bias in favor of prescription drugs. Food has always seemed the best medicine to me, especially as a preventive practice. There is a tendency today for once drug-oriented physicians to proselytize about nutrition while recommending highly questionable glandular extracts and drug-sized doses of vitamins and minerals. These new converts seem to forget that nutrition also means food. In my program of preventive dietetics, food is first, with minor vitamin and mineral supplementation as an adjunct. In cases of minor illness, we recommend modified diets in conjunction with herbal teas. And then I go into the type of diets. And of course, I want you to understand, synthetic drugs are life-saving when they are used properly. Surgery, life-saving when used properly. And the entire arsenal of space-age medicine, life-saving when used properly. But they should be reserved for severe or stubborn or chronic cases. And then I go into this. If your pediatrician agrees that the symptoms are not alarming, the more natural nutritional approach should be your first course of action. And that's why I wrote the book. And I have the diets for children. And then I have diets for natural complaints from acne, allergy, blah, 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 all the way up to a whooping cough. So, you know, you could laugh at me if you want. It doesn't matter to me how much of a doubting Thomas you are. If you want to go get poisoned with synthetic drugs, be my guest. And those of you who have children, I'm sad to tell you that this generation of pediatricians is not the same as it was even 20 years ago. 20 years ago, the pediatricians were the least paid in all of medicine because they didn't prescribe drugs too often. I'm sorry to tell you that this latest flock of pediatricians has all too frequently been peopled by doctors who are pushing Ritalin, anti-cholesterol drugs, and other dangerous substances simply to make a buck.
Savage.
You know, this is very risky for me to do a nutrition segment in the middle of a... You're used to me as a political guy. That's what, you know, established me across the globe. And you know, the audience is very large. It's about politics. You say, well, do they really want to hear this? I don't know. There's no meter that could be put out there. How do I know if you really want to hear this? But I need to reinvent my show because I need to make new things happen on this program, and I'm doing it. And since this is an expertise of mine, I think that it's of importance. I don't know if a person listening to the show doesn't watch their diet or take a vitamin. I don't know. I can't imagine there's a person listening who wouldn't understand that they'd be interested in some of this. So anyway, I've given you my background, and that's why I'm doing this. And I've asked some questions, and now I'll take your callers. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin in San Francisco. Esther, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, doctor. You asked about people who had your books. We have all your books in our clinic. We've been resourcing you for many years, and especially the immigrants in epidemics. And we're always very excited when you talk about nutrition. So just like keeping the country healthy and safe, you have to do the same thing with your body.
Esther, let me ask you, what type of clinic are you referring to?
You mean my clinic?
Yes.
I'm co-owners in a holistic preventive medicine clinic.
Isn't that wonderful? And I'm interested. I have not been in the field for so long. I used to know all the great guys in it. How is that business doing? That whole, because the government doesn't pay for any of that. Obamacare won't pay for holistic medicine, will they?
Well, we go back to your day in the 70s and 80s. We have a common friend, Dr. Cathcart and Dr. Morton.
Oh, God, was he was a giant. I love Bob.
And it's a great loss, but he goes on, and he goes on through you, and the work will always be valuable. Even a decade, two, three from now, your work will always be valuable because this is what we need as a people to stay well and prevent cancer, prevent degenerative disease. It's the new paradigm, don't you agree?
Oh, why do you think I've been involved in it for so long? I still agree. You know, you mentioned Dr. Cathcart, who was a fabulous human being in addition to being a genius as a physician. But, of course, he was a colleague of the great Dr. Linus Pauling. What's intriguing to me is that after Dr. Pauling died, the man was a giant. All the Lilliputians in the medical field tried to deconstruct Pauling's great work, and they ran fraudulent studies, as you well know. For example, the Mayo Clinic, I lost all respect for the Mayo Clinic when I saw that they ran fraudulent studies, for example, on vitamin E. What they did was they used dosages that were far too low, and they only used alpha tocopherol rather than mixed tocopherols. And they ran it for too short a period of time to get any results. Then they said vitamin E has no effect whatsoever. And I saw the Mayo Clinic doing this over and over again, because my belief is the Mayo Clinic is in cahoots with the drug establishment. Would you concur with that, Esther?
I would totally agree with that. I've been involved with medical heretics for a number of decades now, and I know that if you can't patent it and you can't sell it in some way, shape, or form, it's not going to be the preferred treatment. And that's so sad for our people.
It is. Absolutely. And you know what's intriguing, again, to me, is that President Obama, let's put aside his politics for a minute, wouldn't you think that he and Michelle, being younger people, would be in favor of alternative medicine, especially since they pushed through the socialized medicine of Obamacare? Wouldn't you think they'd want preventive medicine of this nature to be widely publicized in the country?
Well, I think that's why Alice Waters is mad at them, because they have sweet potatoes planted in their garden that are fully grown just for the photo op.
Yeah, and I have to say, and I don't say it because I want to be a wise guy, Michelle Obama lectures us about healthy eating, and then she's seen eating ice cream every time they go on vacation. Have you noticed that, Esther?
It's not even a good quality ice cream. I mean, you can eat ice cream, but it doesn't have to be full of all the GMO materials and homogenized level dairy. I mean, you can eat ice cream.
I think it's kind of hypocritical myself. But let's get back to this. I appreciate it, Esther, that you have my books, and thank you for calling the show. So you want to do a little more nutrition, we can do it. Then we're going to get into all of the political stuff for the day. We have lots of it. Let's see, what's the political stuff for the day? The Muslims have blocked the streets in Paris, so-called, to pray. They're blocking the streets, and residents are trapped in their houses. What this is an attempt by Muslims to show that they have more power than the French government, and that the French government has capitulated to the growing Muslim population, and that goes right back to the Victory Mosque at Ground Zero. We're going to talk about that a little later. You have to say that's not true. Just look at the history of the world. I know it's very hard for you to understand history when your mind has been distorted. You say, well, wait a minute, what about the Christians and their crusades? All true. But what you don't know is the first Christian crusade was actually a reaction to the Muslim crusade that almost took over all of Europe. You wouldn't know any of that because you've had revisionist history pushed down your throat. The first Christian crusade was an attempt to kick the Muslims back out of France and Spain. And in fact, they were stopped at Poitiers in France by much bolder men than the types that we have now in gray flannel brain with gray flannel brains. Mississippi Greg, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, a great pleasure.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask what you think we can do to salvage the food culture in this country, since you talk a lot about food or language borders and culture. Big problem I seem to see in my profession is that people associate their food with whatever they can get at the fast food places or in supermarkets and so forth, and I think.
Well, are you a cook? Are you a chef?
No, sir. I'm a physician, actually.
Interesting. So, how would you define American cuisine? What would typify American cuisine?
I think most people, in my experience, the problem is processed food, the industrialization of our food sources. Oftentimes, the food that we eat might not even come from the same continent.
Oh, so you're not talking about menus. You're talking about quality, the actual inherent quality of vegetables, fruits, meat, etc., right?
Well, also, I mean, people don't they don't own the sense of where their food is coming from. For example, Italians eat Italian food, and Chinese eat Chinese food.
Right, but they don't even ask where. If you go to Chinese food and you eat it, do you know where the shrimp are coming from? For example, they used to come out of the Gulf. Unfortunately, now most of them are coming out of Bangladesh or Thailand. They're farm-raised, and they're poison.
Yes.
And I mean, that's what you're talking about. We all know, see, people who are into this, I mean, I for example, I like smoked salmon. Now, I love wild salmon that's been smoked properly with a low smoke flavor in it. But if I see farm-raised salmon, I won't eat it because they're full of antibiotics. The salmon are raised in ponds, and they're fed certain feeds to make them fatter faster. And the feeds are filled with growth hormones and antibiotics. I don't want to eat fish like that, obviously. But if you go to a restaurant and you're eating smoked salmon, you know darn well it's going to be the cheapest they can get their hands on, right?
Absolutely.
All right, this is the challenge we all have, which is going into a restaurant and trying to eat food that's healthful. It's almost impossible unless they're stating on the menu, all of our produce is organically grown. Our meats are raised on X farm. Our fish is not farm raised. Some of them are doing that now.
And I agree with you about trying to, you know, use natural methods and nutritional methods first, rather than, I mean, unlike Esther, I am a standard primary care physician, I do try.
I think that you heard me say it's not the doctor's fault today with the prescription drugs. It's part and parcel of the culture. It's very hard for you as a physician not to prescribe something because people go in there. I will bet you'll confirm this. They want you to prescribe something. They feel as they're cheated unless you write a prescription for them. Am I right about that?
I would say in the vast majority of the cases, yes.
Yes, and I swear to you, the government, this is an interesting thing that I'm about to say. I probably get criticized for it. But some of what Obamacare is trying to do makes sense, incidentally. You know, there are certain aspects of reining in health care costs that make good sense. We all know that there's corruption and greed in virtually every sphere, including medicine. But when you realize that people are getting medical care for virtually every creaky crank complaint, for free, something has to give. You have to cut it back somewhere, don't you?
Yes, and I do think that it has to start with Americans changing their expectations of what, like you say, what medicine should do for them.
Exactly. In other words, I remember when I was young, I once complained about an ache or a pain I had. I was about 12, and my mother said, don't you think I have aches and pains? I don't talk about them. Just forget it. Now, today, right away, run to the doctor. Maybe you got them MRI, CAT scan. God only knows what they put you on. 10 different drugs for a little ache. The human being has to learn to live with these things. Don't you think that's part of a missing link in our education?
Yes, and it is. And I struggle every day with how to help us out of that.
Well, look, I know that being a physician today is still a noble profession for men like you. I can hear in your voice that you didn't go in it for the money. You went in to help people. And so I respect that. I truly do. My whole point is that there's an overuse of prescription drugs and an underuse of nutrition. That was really the primary animus of what I was talking about. I appreciate the work you do, and I thank you for calling the program. So we're going to do a few more, then we're going to go into regular programming today on the Savage Nation with all of the horrendous news, all the horrible news of the world out there. And it's terrible. It really is. It's awful. People say to me, how do you do this show? How can you do this every day for 16 years? How come it hasn't killed you? The answer is somebody up there likes me because I don't know. Because if stress, if it's true that stress kills you, I would have been dead at 11. I have said this before, but I'm not kidding you. I've had a very stressful life. I mean, my family life was hard. We had tragedy in the family, immigrant family. It was always tough. I personally don't think stress kills a person. I frankly think the lack of stress can kill you faster than stress itself. That's number one. Number two, it's how you deal with the stress. You know, I once learned when I was younger this from Chinese poetry. Look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud. What does that mean? Like when I was 16... if I saw a beautiful girl walk by in the halls of the high school, blah, 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 right? And eventually I learned that this phrase, look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud. You don't have to capture every cloud that goes by in the sky. You don't have to try and grab and hold on to every beautiful girl that goes by or anything else that you desire is the point. And it's the same in reverse. It's the same in reverse, I've learned. Look at every passing cloud that is dark and foreboding as something passing through the night. It's going to disappear. Any darkness that comes your way, it's going to go away. I don't care how long it lasts, that storm is going to pass right through you. Just don't hold on to that storm. I know this is so new agey, you're not expecting it, but, you know, at a certain point, don't you think we all have mental techniques or mental gymnastics that we must use in order to get through life? Right now, America is going through some very, very rough times, economic and social, not to mention the moral degradation of our society. And we don't have to point fingers because we know who's behind it. We know who the devils are. There's no point hammering it over and over again and saying, here they are and they're doing it again. Every movie that comes out shows someone slashing or burning or cutting. And the next day, the evil actor who's acting that part out with a gun in his hand or a knife is on Good Morning America talking against using a gun. You take an idiot like Sean Penn, one of the worst abusers of this I've ever seen. Virtually every movie he does, he's a murderer, a killer, a violent person. And then the next day, he's up there talking about peace and love. I mean, you can't believe these people. They're liars. You got to remember, they're marionettes and they're entertainers. And so they're responsible for it. I remember in the 80s, every movie poster that came out in the 80s, I noted it to myself. Every poster, beautiful actress, gun in her hand. Good-looking guy, gun in his hand. Every movie poster showed somebody with a handgun. And the next day, these schmucks were up there talking against handgun violence. They were joining the crackpots, the anti-Second Amendment people, at the Brady Bunch. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah, here we are, here we are. We're doing, you know, what is more political than health? Absolutely nothing. That's why Obama's popularity has sunk so low. You think about what I'm saying to you. I'm doing health and nutrition today, right? Say, well, that's not politics. It's very political. There's nothing more political than taking control over your own health, incidentally, and disavowing an establishment that wants to control you from cradle to grave with A, running paranoia through your head. Oh, this, you're going to come to us for that. You need a drug for this. You need the government to pay for that. They're making you into a vassal of the state in that regard. So there's really nothing more political, in fact, than health, when you think about it, which is what the ruckus was about with Obamacare, right? I mean, that's when the Democrats started to go into their tailspin by pushing this down our throats where most people don't want it. It's an interesting thing because the more I thought about Obama and Obamacare, I have an entire chapter on it in Trickle Up Poverty, incidentally, which is very important, where I totally deconstruct the entire Obamacare health bill because we read it, every word of it. There's a funny thing that I'm going to say to you. We do need a revision in how health care is delivered in the country. We do need a revision of what people can expect to get from for free, in other words. Do you think that it's possible for an older person to go to any doctor that he wants for as many times as he wants for even minor complaints and that you pay for it? Impossible. It's the road to perdition and bankruptcy, which is where we are today. So certainly something needed to be done. You do have to restrict care. You cannot have unlimited care paid for by a government because that means that that you're going to pay for it with taxes that are punishing. Now, people say, wait a minute, Mike, you're actually starting to sound like one of those guys in the Obama. Well, whatever I sound like doesn't matter to me. I'm not a politician. I'm a talk show host, and I'm trying to arrive at a truth. So wherever my thoughts take me, I go. We all know there has to be something here has to give. Now, rather than saying we're going to cut back on Medicaid, for example, you certainly could put in co-payments. I don't understand this. If you put in a co-payment of $15 for any visit to any doctor, it would cut down on the recreational medicine that too many people practice in this country today. Did you hear what I just said? Now, I coined the phrase recreational illness. By the way, in 1981, it was in my book, The Skeptical Nutritionist. I called it recreational medicine. Back then, 81, 91, 01, 30 years ago? Was that 81, 83? I don't remember. Something in that period of time. So I've been at this a very long time. I also used the phrase food fascism for the first time in The Skeptical Nutritionist. What do I mean by food fascism? Well, you can pretty much figure out what that is. That's people telling you what to eat and what not to eat. I call that food fascism. So there's nothing more political than food and nutrition, in my opinion. And so that's why I thought it'd be a good thing to talk about today on the Savage Nation and show you how everything is political at the end of the day. Sexuality, it's political. isn't it? Food, political. Vitamins, political. You want to hear something quite ironic about vitamins? I'm a big believer in preventive nutrition and in taking of vitamins. I take mega doses of vitamin C, vitamin E, a mega dose of a certain nutritional supplement, which I'm not going to mention. I take fish oils a gram a day. And by the way, the fish oils were the single biggest change in my adult life in lowering my triglycerides by about 30% after about 6 months. I thought it was amazing. I do not take any anti-cholesterol medication for a number of reasons. One, because it caused almost muscle damage in my body almost immediately. I'm just one of those who can't take it. Even with coenzyme Q, it didn't work. And I don't want to mess with my liver enzymes if I can avoid it. Same reason I don't take niacin. Niacin is as effective as anti-cholesterol drugs and less toxic. But what you don't know about niacin can hurt you. Niacin is an acid. And as such, it can produce swelling in certain people's arthritic swelling, let's put it to you that way, and the same kind of pains that anti-cholesterol drugs can produce. I didn't know that until I got into this in great detail, because niacin was a miracle for many people. It saved many people from total occlusion of their arteries. So I can't use niacin either, except in rather smaller dosage. And so here I go in a function. You can only do the best you can do and only take this nutrition and health so far. And the rest you have to leave up to a lot of prayer and faith. And that's the end of the story. Because no matter what you do for yourself, one third of it is genetic. One third of it is environmental, which you can control to a certain extent. And I would say about 20% of health and disease is unknown. Unknown. Mysterious. I've had doctor friends tell me they've done autopsies on people with perfectly clear arteries, died of heart attacks.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling.
Well, it is the Savage Nation. There's big news coming out of Paris. Radical Muslims are blocking the streets for so-called prayer, while the government has chickened out and is turning the other way. Reporters are saying that Muslims account for only 10% of the French population, but nobody knows for sure, because why? Liberal French laws prohibits counting based on religion. And the birth rate for Muslims is significantly higher. And also, some Muslim men are accused of polygamy with multiple wives and children, all collecting welfare checks. Welcome to the demise of the Western world, coming to a neighborhood near you. And Ground Zero Mosque, the Ground Zero Mosque, is part of that continuum, in case you don't know it. But then again, I don't expect anything out of our politicians, so I don't really want to do the politics so much as I want to do the nutrition, which I started in the last hour. Again, each day of the week, we're going to have a special kind of orientation of the show. And on Thursdays, I'm going to try to do nutrition, because I have a great background in it. It's how I started Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, and all of the other books. I don't want to read them again. I've had over 25 books published to date, and no one can take that away from me. It's something I'm very proud of. And, of course, soon coming Trickle Up Poverty, October 5th. It's already moved up to almost number one on Amazon in political books. It's amazing what's happening in advance orders. So next week when I do this show, God willing, we're all here next Thursday, what I'm going to do is ethnic foods, because I once studied that in great detail. It's a fascinating topic, and I'm going to get distracted now and start talking about it. But I just want to give you a sneak preview. When I say ethnic foods, I bet you say, aha, I'm Irish, I eat Irish food, or I'm Italian, I eat Italian food, or I'm Jewish, I eat Jewish food, and such. Most of it is not Irish, Italian, or Jewish food that you're eating. For example, if you say I'm Italian and I eat Italian food, what you're eating is 19th century Italian holiday meals three times a day, which is the road to a heart attack and cancer. Because traditional Italian food didn't consist of veal parmesan and then spumoni, for example, or tiramisu. Absolutely not. It was probably a whole grain pasta with vegetables, very little animal protein, and certainly no sweet dessert. That's to start with. You say, oh, Jewish food. What you're eating is 19th century Polish holiday food. It's not Jewish food. You want Jewish food? Eat Yemenite food. If you want to know what it is to eat Jewish food, you'll have to eat what the Yemenites eat in traditional Yemeni diets. So this is an interesting thing that for most people don't even understand this. I find it fascinating. I studied this in 83, and I was really, really hooked on this whole ethnic nutrition thing. I want to read something to you about the humble potato for a minute, because you're going to see how political a potato can be. This is from Healing Children Naturally, page 124. Now, before I start talking about the potato and I say how political a food can be, do you know what happened in Ireland when the potato blight hit? Millions of people died and millions of people had to emigrate to the United States and elsewhere, all because the potato crop failed. And the reason the Irish people had become so overly dependent on the potato is very interesting. Once a country becomes, or a population becomes, overly dependent on a monocrop or a single crop, they're asking for a disaster to occur, because when that crop becomes diseased or gets wiped out by some other sort of, you know, like climate change, for example, which has happened, the people usually die off. So I'm going to read this to you. You ready for this? One paragraph, potato, an ideal children's food. Undoubtedly, the most important tuber or root crop in the Western world is the potato, which has served as a staple food since the Spanish brought it back from the Andes of South America. This gift of South American Indian ingenuity soon became so successful a food that it made the 18th century population explosion in Europe possible. Do you hear how political that food is, a humble potato? A good source of vitamin C, iron, and protein, the potato is an ideal starchy vegetable for children. Remember to cook potatoes in their skins, and to serve them in ways that permit the skins to be eaten, since much good food fiber and minerals are contained in them. Some cases of severe malnutrition among children who cannot digest milk and dairy are treated successfully with potatoes, which provide a high-quality digestible protein. Other starchy root vegetables are important staples in other parts of the world. The cassava plant, for example, is the source of tapioca, an easily digested starchy food that can be used in puddings, bread, and as a thickening agent. Another tropical tuber, the taro root, is used to make the Polynesian staple known as poi, and is even eaten like the potato in Japan. One last note on the potato again. If I'm saying you should eat the skin, well, unfortunately, the potatoes today are sprayed with maleic hydrazide. I think they're still using it as a, it prevents sprouting, which I'll never understand. If I buy garlic, I want to see sprouts on my garlic, because it means the garlic hasn't been sprayed with maleic hydrazide or other cancer-inducing chemicals. What's wrong with a sprouted garlic? So you eat the sprout on the garlic. Most people certainly wouldn't eat a potato that has two, you know, roots sticking out of it. But you want to try to get organic potatoes if you're going to eat the skin. Very important, particularly for your children. And while we're talking about children's diets, I want to say this. It's very important for you to hear this. Too many people are obsessed with low-fat diets, and they're killing their children. They're putting kids on these anemic diets, and the children are very anemic and sickly as a result. I can talk to you from today until next year, and you're not going to believe me, because you're brainwashed and you think that your kid needs, you know, low-fat, low-cholesterol foods. Well, I'm not telling you to take them to McDonald's every day, but you need some balance here. Children are growing. They're supposed to have high-fat diets at some points in their life. They're supposed to have high protein diets at some point in their life. And I want to remind you again, in case you don't know it, we are designed to eat meat. We're designed to eat fish. We're designed to eat animal flesh, in essence, along with vegetables. How do I know that? Because if you study simple anatomy, let's start with carnivores like a dog or a lion. Carnivores have large teeth for ripping and tearing flesh, and they have short guts, because it's a very small transit time. animals that are herbivores, like a cow, which doesn't eat meat or animal flesh, they have very, very long convoluted guts because they grind up the grains. The grains take a long time to transit through the body. They need a long time to digest. Consequently, their guts are very long. In the middle are the herbivores, are the omnivores, like us. We have mid-sized guts. We have some canine teeth and some teeth for grinding, starchy grains and vegetables. We're designed for meat. We're designed for fish. We're designed for some chicken. Now, that does not mean you can't get rid of all of these animal proteins if you wish, and if you know how to balance foods, you can do it. Many people do. They're very happy, and they live well. But it's very tricky to balance vegetarian diets. Many of the girls today are on these obsessive, I'm a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. They're anemic. They're depressed. They're hysterical because they're not getting iron. They're not getting B6. They're deficient in B12, and they're hysterical because they're starving to death. They don't even understand this. And you look at the men in America. Why do you think so many men are impotent or they can't have children? It's related in many cases to these horrible diets that they're on. And I remember when I was in nutrition practice, I'll never forget this famous story. I think she has since, she did die, this woman. I won't even mention her name. I think, it was a scandal. Someone threw her off a cliff. I think we all know who. I won't go any further than that. I remember I once had a nutrition practice for a short period of time in a medical office here in Sausalito, California. Okay. Woman comes in. She's depressed. She's tired, fatigued. She can't go to the bathroom very well. I say to her, what kind of diet are you on? She says, well, I'm a vegetarian. I said, really? And what kind of food does your husband eat? She says, well, he owns a winery. And she said, oh, he eats terribly. I said, what does he eat? She said, oh, it's terrible. He drinks a lot of red wine. He eats lots of meat and potatoes and vegetables. I said, what shape is he? And she said, very, very vigorous, very healthy. I said, would you do me a favor? Would you eat like your husband does for 3 days? She was shocked. She said, but I'm a vegetarian. I said, well, I don't care. I mean, you asked me to help you. You came to me. I didn't come to you. So go home and eat like your husband for 3 days. She comes back a week later. She couldn't believe it. She said, I'm cured. I can sleep. I feel good. I didn't know that I was deficient in eating. I said, well, okay, congratulations. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So let me show you the intersection between food and politics. How often have you been on an airplane and you ask the flight attendant, can I have some peanuts? And she says, I'm sorry, someone has a peanut allergy on the plane. So there's food fascism. One cretinous, legal-oriented lunatic tells you you can't have peanuts in the airplane because she is allergic to peanuts. Now, what would happen if you brought your own pack of peanuts on an airplane and when the light goes off, you order a drink, and you will take out your peanut. You're telling me that person's going to tell you to put your peanuts away? What a lawsuit that would be. I'd say, I dare you to make me put my peanuts away. This is such a fallacy, it's beyond comprehension. Yes, there are people who are allergic to peanuts, of course. They have no right to tell you not to eat peanuts on an airplane. The reason that happened is because of lawsuits against the airlines. And so, therefore, they decided it's better not to serve peanuts all because of one creep who says, I have a peanut allergy. Peanuts are great snacks if you're not allergic to them. I eat, for example, red skin Spanish peanuts with sea salt as a snack. Why do I eat the skins? Because little do you know that the skins and peanuts contain biotin, a very important nutrient. You probably haven't heard about biotin. I'm eating them right now. I'll probably eat too many, and then I'm going to need a beer at the end of the show. Delicious. I love almonds. Because almonds contain some remarkable protective nutrients. Remember the old days? You used to read people, we're going to serve them a feast from soup to nuts. Meals ended with nuts. Because nuts were rich in minerals. Many of us don't even eat nuts anymore. For various reasons. I want to read something to you from Healing Children Naturally for your children again. Let's say you want to keep them on a vegetarian diet. I'm going to read you one paragraph. In spite of the undoubted value of many vegetarian diets, there's only one type that can be recommended for children. It's known as the lacto-ovo-vegetarian diet. What does that mean? That includes egg and dairy products, as well as vegetable foods, thereby guaranteeing that complete proteins and other important nutrients will be available in a diet. In this diet, we must be sure to complement the protein sources to ensure an adequate supply of all the essential amino acids, and so forth. The diet must also include milk, cheese and eggs, since they supply vitamin B12 and A and minerals such as calcium and iron, as well as ensuring supply of all the important amino acids. The diet for your child must also supply the all-important adequate folicin and zinc, which are sometimes lacking in vegetarian diets. And iodized salt or sea salt should be used. The relationship between salt and hypertension is amplified on page 127. Okay. I say that most Americans today eat much more animal protein than they need. I know that. I didn't say that. What I said was eat some, don't eat none, or don't eat all. So this is all in page 120, Healing Children Naturally. Not to sell you a book, but to educate you. I was going to change my lifestyle if I sold 100 books today. I won't sell 100 books. It doesn't matter to me. It's a very important document, and the information shouldn't be lost to the public's knowledge, that's all. So I've had my fun. I'll take a few more calls, and we'll go into straight politics if you like. I wish there was a way to, like, have a meter. You know, how big was the audience? Did they tune out faster? Did they stay listening longer? We don't know. There's no way to know that. In other words, I would like to know, oh, boy, they listened an hour longer when you did nutrition than they would have normally, because they hear the Obama stuff all day long from the guys who wrapped themselves in the flag and made a fortune doing it, pretending that they're going to save the world. I know how to do that, and I believe in what I'm saying, but there's only so much I want to do on that score. Half of the guys in the conservative band are either going to become false preachers in order to survive, or I don't know what they're going to have to do to reinvent themselves. After the election in November, what the heck are they going to be talking about? They're going to go into the hokum. They're going to start telling you that they can walk on water, and then you should follow them because they're going to part the Red Sea. Remember, there was a movie called Marjo in the 60s. Half of the guys who call themselves conservatives remind me of Marjo. You know, the revival tent. I think you know who I'm talking about in particular. From the blackboard to the revival tent, that's all. Let's go to some callers. Montana, Richard, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, Michael, this is Richard up in Montana. I'd like to go over a quick story real quickly with you. It comes out of the past, and I'm going to tie it right into the present. Michael, in 1990, I was doing environmental work, and I was also working with very advanced AIDS clients. And right. We were doing blood ionization, which was taking care of the virus real, real well. However, we were losing people right and left, and they were going down primarily to other cofactors, first one of which was thrush, okay? Now, we had been through all the medical books. By the way, I had three doctors as clients, and we had a real emergency situations where people were going into the wasting syndrome, unable to assimilate their nutrients. The thrush, which we came to know was candida, was running wild in all these immunosuppressed individuals.
Yes.
And, you know, and I had clients, I mean, we were talking about CD counts of 14. Now, doing the blood ionization, we were able to get rid of the virus real quickly. One day, I'm out at a shopping mall. There's a used book sale that's going on. I look down, and I see this book. It's called Maximum Immunity. Well, I picked it up, took it home. Michael, I can tell you there are hundreds, if not thousands, that are alive today because of this book. I'm going to go to page
5
real quick.
Wait, hold on. No, you know something? That's the nicest thing anyone has said to me about my health writing career, because I never heard that in my entire life. Instead, I was attacked by the vicious scum in the liberal media because I didn't say politically correct things about the AIDS epidemic. They wanted to hear lies instead of the truth. I wrote that book to save lives. They wrote their falsehoods, and as a result of it, many people died because they wouldn't listen to the truth. You know that that's a fact.
I know that that's a fact, and I can tell you for sure.
Hold on. Stay on. I want to hear more of this. Now we're getting political.
Savage.
See, we're living in an age where everything is political. Look how weather has been politicized by Al Gore and the phonies at the UN, right? Health, perhaps the most political subject on earth. Look what Obama did to the Democrat Party by forcing that down our throats against the will of the largest majority of the American people do not want Obamacare in any form. So that's why I say, okay, so I have a background in nutrition and health. I'll do it today. And look where we are now. We're talking about nutrition and health and politics because they're interwoven. And there's not even a separation at all. And I'm going to go back to the caller in Montana in a minute, Richard, but I want to say something that's quite ironic to me. Back in the 70s, when I began in the nutrition field, the Democrats were the greatest supporters of the vitamin industry and self-help. In fact, Representative Waxman, the guy with the expanded nostrils who looks like a wild boar, used to be a strong friend of the vitamin industry. And as time has turned, he has become the worst enemy of alternative medicine, the worst enemy of the vitamin industry, and the greatest pimp for the drug peddlers. That's the horrible reality. It just shows you what money can do to people. And at the end of the road, it is the conservatives in America who are the most believing and the most supportive of complementary medicine, the free use of vitamins, homeopathy, herbal medicine, etc., and the most restrictive SOB are the liberal Democrats who should have been the best friend of alternative medicine. And ask yourself how that happened. Ask yourself how all of the so-called alternative medicine community doesn't understand that the very liberal policies that they support are, in fact, endangering their own survival. Now let's go back to Montana, Richard. Richard, welcome back. So you were wandering around in Montana or somewhere, and you saw a maximum immunity, and what happened?
Well, actually, this was down in Arizona then, Michael, and I picked up maximum immunity because I had all of these clients that were dying, and these doctors that one was a pediatrician, one was a radiologist, one was a internal specialist, and none of them had any idea as to what was happening in their own systems, much less within the other people that we had as clients. Well, I knew that this yeast fungus, yeast really was a cause of some major problems. I picked up the book, opened it up, and I bought it, Michael, for $2.30, okay? And yeah. For $2.30, I went back to school. I went to chapter 13, which was candidiasis. Now, I'll cut right to it. This is where I learned what the effects of candida were going to be on all these systems we were dealing with, both men and women. They were dying before our eyes. By putting together the tea with Pau de Arco, which I made sure came out of Argentina, by the way, northern Argentina.
Yeah, and by the way, I was the first one to bring it, as I know of, to popularize the use of it. I then found it in Fiji and started to bring it in from Fiji. I've had nothing to do with it for 30 years. Dr. Cathcart used to distribute it in his own office, incidentally. I have nothing to do with distribution of that tea today. And it did stop the thrush. I know it did. It was phenomenal.
Able to do it orally, rectally, and also put it into a douche solution, and we were able to eliminate the thrush. Then when I combined in with it a chaparral extract, which I got out of the desert, we were able to address Kaposi sarcoma. And also in this chapter, I learned about oleic acid, which I was able to put an ionized oxygen molecule onto. And with that, we were able to go all the way through the whole, internal digestive system. And this book.
So, Richard, what is your training? And what you're an organic chemist, I understand?
I'm an organometallic chemist right now, and I work primarily in the mining industry. But it's taken me into a lot of different arenas.
Maximum Immunity, when I wrote it, it came out, it went into six languages. I thought it was an important beginning step in understanding the immune system and helping people understand that they actually have a war going on inside their own bodies. And either they help their defense cells or they actually inhibit their own defense cells. Most people are ignorant of the fact that they're driving around and there's a war going on inside their own bodies because it terrifies people. Am I right, Richard?
Going on inside their bodies. And, Michael, as your program is bringing out, there's a war going against us. Now, I'm an oath keeper, and I believe that we should not only hold our politicians, but we should also hold our physicians to their oath. The first part being, thou shalt not do any harm. Now, it was with...
Richard, hold on a minute. Tell us who the oath keepers are. We hear about them. What is this group?
Okay, Oath Keepers, we were founded approximately 1.5 years ago by Stuart Rhodes. Mary and I are part of the initial founding group. There are thousands of us across the country, tens of thousands. We are unified with the police, the military services, in calling attention to those men that are out there serving for our protection, calling attention to each one of them as to what their oath actually is. And that means there are going to be certain orders that we stand down on. In other words, we are not...
I hear you, and by the way, right now the federal government under the Attorney General Holder is attacking Sheriff Arpaio because he's standing against them. It's astounding to me how America doesn't see what's going on, that the federal government has taken the side of the illegal alien, not of the men enforcing the law. It's shocking, isn't it?
It's shameful. We now have a government that is not loyal to the oath.
We have a government that's a renegade government. We have a renegade government that's taken the side of the invaders invading America rather than the policemen who are trying to save us from these invaders. And so you talk about politics. Richard, when is the next convention of the Oath Keepers?
Pardon me?
Is there a convention that the Oath Keepers have once a year or something?
We have an annual convention. We were at Lexington Green last year. We were in Montana this year. I would invite everyone, please go to our sites. And, Michael, I would love the opportunity to continue to have a dialogue with you.
That's why I'm mentioning it, Richard. If you have a big convention, I get excited by these things. Perhaps I can appear at one of them and, you know, meet some friends, real friends. Richard, stay on the line. I'll have my producer get in touch with you. Well, very interesting call. We never know who we touch with our writings and with our orations here on radio. We have no idea who we're reaching. All we hear from are the vermin. All we ever hear from are the Lilliputians who attack us and attack us and attack us. Rarely do we ever hear a compliment. You have to be made of iron to do this, by the way, in and out every day. You have to be made of something very special to be able to do this every day for as many years as I have without cracking from the strain. And that, I think, comes down to faith. Do you believe in what you're saying or don't you? Is there a higher calling or is there not? Are you just in it for the money? Because if you're just in it for the money, you're not going to last in this business. It's impossible. You actually have to believe in your statements in order to get up and do this every day. And I'm so far today, it's been a very rewarding show. I can't say the most rewarding show I've ever done. I came into it extremely tired. I didn't sleep at all last night for various reasons that have nothing to do with you or the show. And I was exhausted. And here I was. I'm elated right now from the feedback I've gotten from my listeners, not only hearing that they still own my books from the 1970s, but that I've helped people in ways I had completely forgotten with my books. But there's another reason. It's because I spent so many decades of my life in this field of vitamins and herbal medicine, and I pushed it all aside to make waves in the political world back in 1994. I had to push it all out of my life, all of it. I leave it all behind. Would you believe it? I don't mean I forgot everything I learned. I had to push it out of my professional life in order to survive and thrive in this rough and tumble world of politics. And frankly, it's a pleasure for me to go back to a part of my life that never really went away, that is very positive, very healing, and very rewarding. I don't know how to say it other than in those words. I'll be right back to take your calls right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, I think I read in Ecclesiastes in the Bible, of the making of many books, there is no end. And boy, oh boy, have I ever lived that life. I mean, I take a look at this list of books I've published. I find it amazing. You look back, but I don't stop because you don't want to turn into a bar of salt, so to speak. You can't look back. I don't know where it all came from, where the energy came from. But anyway, Trickle-Up Poverty may be the opus, the number one opus in October 5th. You can buy it on Amazon. And I'm pushing it for one reason only. I want to change the course of human events. I wrote Trickle Up Poverty to stop the Democrats in 10 and stop Obama in 2012. It's going to be a monster book. I mean, William Morrow you know, paid a major advance. There was no press release on this book. It's probably one of the biggest books of the year. And it's designed specifically to awaken America. The cover itself is like a billboard. And I think of everything I've ever written that could have the most powerful effect. And believe me, I've written a lot of books that have had effects. So I just said that. Of the making of many books, there is no end, Ecclesiastes. I wish there was a biblical expert in the audience who could actually tell me the chapter and verse on that one. Maybe tomorrow if we do a little religion. And you'll see that religion is the most political subject as well, or one of the most religious. Hey, I have to sell you on that? You're telling me religion is not very political? Take a look at what the radical Islamists are doing with their religion. And how we have a religious establishment in this country, the Christian establishment, that is so meek that it's threatened to disappear in the next 50 years. It's so meek that it might disappear from the planet. Now compare the Christianity of today to that of the Crusaders, who saved Europe from the onslaught. Compare it. Oh, you're not supposed to say that. Are you supposed to turn the other cheek? No, my friends, you're not supposed to turn the other cheek. Read your Bible. You're supposed to defend yourself. Perhaps the most important rule of any religion is defend yourself against those who would take away your freedom of religion. How's that one? Does that work for you? And I want to remind you of something else. It was Christian crusaders who pushed the Muslims back out of France and out of Spain after the Muslims had invaded Spain and France and threatened to take over all of Europe and wipe Christianity off the map. It was only the crusaders who were all religious, devoutly religious Christians who saved their own civilizations. And look what we have today. You have a spineless, liberal, communist establishment that hates Christianity and supports Islam. Think about that. Why are they so in love with Islam and so hateful of Christianity? Why are they such Christophobes? Why? How have they become so? What do they expect is waiting for them? They think they're going to be rewarded? Should Islam rise even further? All of the feminists? I can't believe the things I hear when the Ground Zero Mosque story was being debated so heavily a week ago. A woman gets up and says, I'm a lesbian and I'm a socialist and Muslims are being picked on and I want the mosque. The woman is a moron, an ignoramus. How does she get so brainwashed as to think that fundamentalist Muslims like lesbians and socialists? Where'd she get that from? How did they get so distorted that they don't even understand they're digging their own graves, I ask myself. So today I showed you that nutrition and health are extremely political. I don't have to sell you on that idea. You know it with Obamacare. Tomorrow, if I say I'm going to do a religion segment, how much more do I have to tell you about religion and the intersection between religion and politics than every day in the news you read it? For example, I'm going to play a soundbite for you right now of what's going on in Paris from the radical Muslims who are the brethren of those who want to build the Ground Zero Mosque. Play that clip. Go ahead.
This is a Friday in Paris, filmed by hidden camera. The streets are blocked by a huge crowd of Muslim worshippers, and it's enforced by private security. This is all illegal in France, the public worship, the blocked streets, and the private security. But the police have been ordered not to intervene. It shows that even though some in the French government want to get tough with the Muslims and ban the burqa, other parts of the French government continue to give Islam privileged status.
You hear this? Hold it. This is coming to a neighborhood near you. The spineless, communist, liberal slime are going to kill us all. They're going to kill all of us. Listen to the next one.
They are blocking the streets with barriers. They are praying on the ground. And the inhabitants of this district cannot leave their home nor go into their home during those prayers. The Muslims who are taking over the streets do not have any authorization. They do not go to the police headquarters, so it's completely illegal.
Go ahead, just keep playing it.
These Muslims have been granted unofficial rights that no Christian group is likely to get under France's laïcité or secularism law.
So it says people have the right to share any belief they want, any religion, but they have to practice at home or in the mosque, synagogues, churches, and so on.
Some say these Muslims must pray in the street because they need a larger mosque. But Maxime has observed cars coming from other parts of Paris, and he believes it's a weekly display of Muslim power.
They are coming there to show that they can take over some French streets, to show that they can conquer a part of the French territory.
Muslims are said to be no more than 10% of the French population, although no one knows for sure because French law prohibits population counts by religion. But the birth rate for Muslims is significantly higher than for native French. Some Muslim men are said to practice polygamy, in some cases with each extra wife having children and collecting a welfare check.
With Islam.
How's that? How's that? How's that, you liberal schmucks, you? You Mayor Dumberg? Mayor Dumberg in New York, you dumbbell, you? You don't even know what's going on under your nose, that the Victory Mosque that you're helping build is helping to lead a paving stone to your own demise, you moron, you. You think it's freedom of religion, you idiot? You have no idea it's a worldwide campaign against the West, you schmuck. At least that's how I see it. And I've been looking at things pretty clearly for a long period of time, and there's an awful lot of people who see things the way I do. Millions of them, in fact, who listen to this radio show on a daily basis, and millions of them who have bought my books over the years. And if you want to write it all off as right-wing stuff, I can say, just do so at your own risk and your own peril, you idiots. Sometimes those of us who are acting like Paul Revere, trying to save you from yourself, are correct, and you and your own stupid instincts are leading you to your own grave. This is what's going on in the world today. I believe in freedom of religion, but I also believe in the United States of America. I believe the United States of America has certain duties to its citizenry, and I don't have to spell them out to you. You take a look at Arizona, you've got Sheriff Joe trying to stop the stem of illegal drugs, illegal aliens, the gangs that are roaming wildly in the streets of Arizona. And what does our government do under Obama the Decorator? What does Obama the Decorator cause Eric Holder, the Attorney General, to do? To harass and threaten Sheriff Joe with civil rights lawsuits for upholding the law. That's what he does. We have a rogue government. It's as though we have a rogue government that has been taken over by an extreme band of revolutionaries who are intent upon destroying America itself, taking it apart steel beam by steel beam, just as the Obamas redecorated the Oval Office and turned it into something out of a, it looks like a rental or a double tree, as people said. Have you ever heard of a president throwing out all the furniture and replacing it with corduroy furniture? Corduroy furniture in the Oval Office? Colors that don't project any presidential authority or power, instead projecting some kind of neutrality, neutral tones, as though any day anyone can occupy this or they could rent it out by the night to raise more revenue for the nation. Yes, the colors themselves depict exactly what's going on in the mind of this president. We have a big election coming up. As you all know, you're praying that you will throw the bums out. You're praying that women like Boxer will be gone forever, sent back to brassiere stores in Brooklyn, and you hope that there'll be a change. Let me tell you something. There will be a change, but it won't be what you think you're going to get. You're going to get a changing of the decoration. You're not going to get a fundamental changing of the political structure of this country. For example, Fiorina running against Boxer here in California. Yeah, well, you know what she came out for yesterday during the campaign? She came out for a program that would give free education to illegal aliens in colleges. So tell me what hope there is. Meg Whitman comes out and puts out advertisements saying, oh, I'm so much better than Jerry Brown, which of course she is. Anybody would be better than Jerry Brown. We've seen what Jerry Brown can do. But Meg Whitman comes out and says she's against the Arizona law. Again, catering to the illegal alien, catering to the criminals who broke into this country, abused the systems, broke down the schools, broke down the hospitals, broke down the healthcare system in the country, and we have one politician after another catering to them, bending over backwards to them. Quite akin, wouldn't you say, to what the politicians in France are doing with the radical Muslims who have taken over certain streets. And that's a summary thus far in the Savage Nation. I hope you've enjoyed the nutrition segment. It's good for your health.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
darling dear.
This is the Savage Nation.
Love you all the time. I'm just a fool, a fool in love with you.
Today is the first day that we are doing a segment on health and nutrition, mainly nutrition, because I've been writing health books since 1972. I was a famous author in the field of health and nutrition prior to joining radio in 1994, and my books go back quite a while, and so therefore that's why it's a big topic today and quite interesting. I mean, I'll read you some of the titles that I published. Many of you still own them. Earth Medicine, Earth Food, that's the first book I ever published by Macmillan in 1972. I've kind of lost track of the sequence. In general, here are the other books. Plant a Tree, A Guide for Regreening America. How's that for you green guys on the left who think that you invented the environmental stuff? Herbs That Heal, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist, 1983. The Complete Book of Homeopathy, Healing Children Naturally, still available on Michael Savage. Maximum Immunity, Houghton Mifflin, 1986. Man's Useful Plants, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, Getting Off Cocaine, The Taster's Guide to Beer, The Herbal Bible, and of course, coming soon is my big, big book, perhaps my last nonfiction book. Never know. I don't know that there's going to be many others. It's my finale. It's called, well, you know what it's called, Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders and Security. So these are the questions for today, by the way. Did you buy any of these health books in the 70s or 80s? Do you still refer to them? Is the book still relevant to you? And how did you use it? Now, what is your favorite non-political Savage book? What non-political book would you like most if I would ever write one again? We're also talking about the climate hoax of the century, and that is a huge story. What do I mean by the climate hoax of the century? I mean the meltdown of climate change or global warming and the scam first put forward by Al Gorleoni. No one is going to trust any scientists after this, because the global warming establishment just took a body blow this week as the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change received a stunning rebuke from a top-notch independent investigation. We've been hearing that the science is complete, the science is in, which I knew was a fraud, because the first rule of science is never complete, and science is never in. That's the mark of hype, okay? But now an independent association of the best scientists and engineers worldwide, the Inter-Academy Council, has finished a thorough review of this global warming garbage, and they said it's terrible, just awful. In fact, they said that the Himalayan glaciers were rapidly melting and would possibly be gone by the year 2035. This claim was actually false, and yet the UN group cited it as proof of man-made global warming. It was based upon one hysterical supposition by one crackpot fake scientist. Look, the bottom line here is that most of this was done for money. It's a fraudulent glacier story. And the man who wrote it and pushed it was Rajendra Pachauri, based in New Delhi, India. He was awarded up to about $500,000 by the Carnegie Corporation and the lion's share of a £2.5 million EU grant funded by European taxpayers because he put forward this hysterical lie about the melting of the Himalayas. It's unbelievable to me. And yet to think that Al Gore still gets away with this is a travesty. In the end, grievous harm will have been done not to individual scientists alone, but to science itself. You know, the NEWS is the Northeast, West, and South, as you well know. That's where the acronym NEWS comes from. Many of you don't know that, but I remember learning that when I was a kid. I was a news watcher since, you don't know this, over 60 years I've been watching the news. Would you believe that? I mean, you say, all right, so what, should I hide it? I have been watching the news virtually every night for over 60 years. And I remember watching the evening news in New York City as a little kid eating my dinner on a tray after a day at school. There was, going back to Cronkite, Roger Mudd, some of the other iconic figures, I've been watching the news for well over 60 years, so I'm not new to this business, okay? Now, I had an interesting exchange with the director of a news service from one of the major networks who said that I criticized them for not covering one of the big events, for not covering the big event over the weekend, the big rally over the weekend. In fact, I never said that they didn't cover the rally. What I said was that the major media underestimated the crowd by several hundred thousand. And I specifically only mentioned CBS, saying it was 78,000 people, when we know there were between 600,000 and a million people there. So once again, I saw the bias, even in the polite letter to me, which was very polite, and my reply was equally polite. But the point is that I've been watching the weather vane, northeast, west, and south, with events from all corners of the world for well over 60 years, and I continue to do so here on a daily basis on the Savage Nation. Yes, I come inherent with my own biases. I do. I admit that. I grew up in another time. I grew up in a time of a truthful and honest, a truthful anti-communism, when there were communists who had infiltrated the government, when there were communists who had infiltrated Hollywood, despite what the leftists have revised and to give the lies that there were no communists, that the McCarthy witch hunt was invented. It's a total falsehood. There were communists in American government. There were communists in the film industry and in the press. Now, how do I know that that's true? Because approximately 10 years ago, former KGB documents were released in a book called The Venona Papers, where former Soviet agents admitted as such that they had placed spies, in essence, soft communist fellow travelers in the news business, in publishing, in academia. So you say, well, that's over. We're not worried about communism anymore. Well, if you believe that, you are mistaken. We have Fidel Castro, a dictator for well over 40 years, who still hates this country and the freedoms in this country. We have Chavez, the communist dictator. We have the communist dictator of Bolivia. We have Kim Jong-il, the madman of North Korea. We have the communist slash capitalist government of China. And so if you think that the battle against communism is over, I only have to refer you to the White House, where several very, very prominent neo-Marxists are employed by Obama in a non-parliamentary fashion. He hired them as czars, as you well know. And their job, their goal, is to change our way of life, to steal freedom from the people and give almost all the power to the central government. Now, thank God they're not doing very well with their designs. They're not doing very well owing to some severe and honest criticism that is coming from only a few areas of America. Thank goodness it's still here. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We all know how a number of European governments are pandering to Muslims, but you must listen to what just happened in Paris.
This is a Friday in Paris, filmed by hidden camera. The streets are blocked by a huge crowd of Muslim worshippers, and it's enforced by private security. This is all illegal in France, the public worship, the blocked streets, and the private security. But the police have been ordered not to intervene. It shows that even though some in the French government want to get tough with the Muslims and ban the burqa, other parts of the French government continue to give Islam privileged status.
This is incredible to listen.
They are blocking the streets with barriers. They are praying on the ground, and the inhabitants of this district cannot leave their home,
wow,
nor go into their home during those prayers. The Muslims who are taking over those streets do not have any authorization. They do not go to the police headquarters, so it's completely illegal.
Listen to the special treatment the radical Muslims are getting.
These Muslims have been granted unofficial rights that no Christian group is likely to get under France's laïcité or secularism law.
So it says people have the right to share any belief they want, any religion, but they have to practice at home or in the mosque, synagogues, churches.
Well, this is a Muslim victory parade in Paris.
Some say these Muslims must pray in the street because they need a larger mosque. But Maxime has observed cars coming from other parts of Paris, and he believes it's a weekly display of Muslim power.
They are coming there to show that they can take over some French streets.
Can you believe
to show
this?
That they can conquer a part of the French territory.
Just like the Victory Mosque, they want to build at Ground Zero.
Muslims are said to be no more than 10% of the French population, although no one knows for sure because French law prohibits population counts by religion. But the birth rate for Muslims is significantly higher than for native French.
Hello?
Some Muslim men are said to practice polygamy, in some cases with each extra wife having children and collecting a welfare check.
We all know about the Muslim agenda.
With Islam, it's not only a problem of numbers. The problem of Islam is a problem of really principles. Is Islam a political ideology or is it just a creed? It doesn't matter how many they are. The problem is the people who follow Islam are there somehow in a political party who has a political agenda.
Coming to a town near you soon.
Means basically implementing Sharia and build an Islamic state.
We can't accept this behavior in America at Ground Zero.
We cannot accept the development of such practice because it's not compatible with the life in a modern society, you see? And this question is not only a French question. You will all have to face this challenge.
Oh, and here's Senator Barbara Boxer explaining why Californians should vote for this deadbeat again in November. She wants to bring jobs back to the state. Can you believe this?
Thanks to the good people of California who have put their faith in me. And because of that, I've been able to enact 1,000 provisions. For our children, the first ever after-school program. For our veterans, the first ever comprehensive casualty care center in California for our wounded warriors. We've doubled the transportation funding. That means thousands of jobs, and jobs are my focus. This election is between someone who's fighting for jobs day in and day out. Jobs right here in America. Versus someone who, when she had the chance, laid off 30,000 workers and shipped jobs to China. This election is about someone who's working hard.
Said the fool.
So that we can see the words "Made in America" again. Versus someone who was proud of her time at HP when she stamped "Made in China," "Made in India" on her products.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. Hey, look at all the uncertainty and instability that Obama's creating. It's no wonder that the economy is shaky. Gold prices have been going through the roof, and that's why you should contact my great advertisers at Swiss America. Obama might be laying the economy low, but gold is defying that trend. Go to the best name in gold, SwissAmerica.com. Play some music.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
Welcome to the Hotel California on the Savage Nation, the late, great Golden State. Look how this state alone, you know, when I moved out here, I moved out here in 1974. It was a paradise. Everything was, I don't know, like a Technicolor Disney movie. It wasn't anything that was wrong about Northern California. I just loved it. And I moved here primarily because the schools were free. The public schools were great. And I never forget when my first child went off to the first grade in a little yellow school bus provided by the state. It was beautiful. I felt good in my heart. I was a poor, you know, graduate student trying to make a living. But I managed to scrape together every penny I saved in my life. I bought a little house. I had worked 3 jobs, went to school. I just felt good about the future. I knew that both of my children, and I distinctly remember it. I said to myself, I'm not a rich man. I'm never going to be a rich man, likely never a rich man. But that was okay. I never set out to be a rich man. We'll be able to go as far in school as they wish, based upon their own abilities and desires, because California had a fantastic educational system from education, starting from the grade school. Then you had the Cal State system, which was one rung below the university system. And then I said there were graduate schools that were great here. Medical schools, dental schools, law schools, engineering schools, whatever they wanted to do would be up to them. I never felt I was going to lead them, push them every step of the way. It's not the way I live. I wasn't raised that way. My father had a sink or swim philosophy. And although I was not quite as old worldish about it as he was, I really, in some ways, you know, said it's up to them how far they want to go. The state was beautiful. The roads were paved. The streets were clean. And then slowly but surely, the liberal cancer started to infect the state. Governor Jerry Brown with his crazy ideas. And one after the other, they kept shoveling money at dead social programs. They started taxing business out of the state. They started to raise state income taxes, driving many productive citizens out of the state. They wouldn't crack down on the illegal aliens, even though people knew that they were bankrupting the schools and bankrupting the hospitals. And look where we are today. When you don't stop a cancer, the cancer spreads. It doesn't go away. Take a look where we've come today, where you have the administrators of the state and of the nation who cater to the cancer rather than to the healthy patient. What if you went to an oncologist and you said, "Doctor, I've been told that I have a cancer, but it can still be stopped. What are you going to do to stop the cancer?" And a doctor studies your illness and he says, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to feed the cancer. I'm not going to try to save the healthy cells. I'm going to feed the cancer and see if I can make the cancer worse." You'd say, well, the doctor is either insane or a criminal. In either case, he should have his medical license pulled. Your politicians are like oncologists who are treating not the cancer, but they're trying to make the cancer get bigger. Instead of saying the healthy cells know what they're doing and we're going to help them, we're going to stop the invasion of the cancer, they're taking the side of the cancer. It's the same in Arizona. It's the same in California. It's the same in Illinois. It's the same in New York. It's the same in Florida.
Savage.
As the debate about the Ground Zero Mosque continues, many keep asking, how can this be going on? How can we, the United States of America, be so willing to let radical Islam control so much as it does in Great Britain and France? Joining us with her opinion on this is Brigitte Gabriel, who may have an answer for us. Brigitte, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be back with you. We are hearing more and more about homegrown terrorism, and we ask ourselves, how can so many Americans be so vulnerable to this recruitment and indoctrination? The answer lays openly before our eyes. Now, we knew that our Islamic enemies have been targeting our future generations through the universities. But radical Islamic influence in America's educational system, Michael, reaches beyond the university level into grade schools and high schools, both public and private.
Really?
Because of the rise of Muslim immigration to the United States in the last two decades, it is now estimated that there are between 200 and 600 Islamic schools or madrasas operating in America today, teaching almost 50,000 students. Many of these schools are breeding grounds for jihad, and some of them are financed with American taxpayers' money, such as the Teza Charter School in Minnesota. On the West Coast, the New Horizon Schools in Pasadena, California, another Islamic private day school, won a Blue Ribbon Award for excellence from the United States Department of Education. Excellence in what, you ask? The Bureau of Islamic and Arabic Education, which developed the school's program of study, has on its website a new twist to the United States Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance? What does it say?
Quote, "As an American Muslim, I pledge allegiance to Allah and His Prophet," end quote.
You're making this up.
The Islamic Society of North America, ISNA, which the United States government has named as unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land trial, is the initiator and architect of all the New Horizon schools in North America. ISNA, which distributes Islamic educational material to mosques and Islamic schools in the United States, is affiliated with domestic terrorist groups and those abroad and has invited Islamic radical extremists to speak at its events.
Radicals, you say? Like who?
For example, Imam Mu'azzil Siddiqui, leader of the Islamic Center of Southern California, which also helped to develop the New Horizons school curriculum, and former ISNA president, give sermons that emphasize the essence and importance of Dawah, which is the Islamic tradition of converting non-Muslims to Islam. The website dawahnet.com includes a section called, quote, "How to Make America an Islamic Nation," end quote. Another page, entitled Dawah and Public Schools, describes the school environment as, quote, "fertile grounds where the seeds of Islam can be sowed inside the hearts of the non-Muslim student." Dawah directs Muslims to communicate with non-Muslims as if, quote, "every non-Muslim is a potential Muslim," end quote.
Well, they're just spreading peace and understanding.
The arm of Islamic propaganda, Michael, is now in the public school system. They figured it worked so well on college campuses in brainwashing American students. Why wait until the kids get to college? Why not start with them in middle school?
This is unbelievable to me.
There is now a course for 7th grade called the Course on Islam. It is a 3-week course taught in many public schools across the country as a part of world history and geography classes. Students are asked to memorize and recite Islamic prayers and verses from the Quran. They have to adopt Muslim names, fast for a day to experience Ramadan, the holiest of Islamic religious holidays, and write about their experience as a Muslim at the end of the program. Exercises during class include encouraging students to incorporate Arabic phrases, such as Allahu Akbar, in their speeches, and to imagine that they are Muslim disciples on a pilgrimage to Mecca. The students have to say the Islamic Shahada, the prayer spoken when one becomes Muslim. This is the same type of thing like when a Christian becomes a born-again Christian and they want to say the salvation prayer.
Well, in that case, the left would be protesting all over the mainstream media.
This is a state-approved curriculum in California and many other states using state-adopted textbooks that have been part of the instructional program in California, for example, for over a decade. The Thomas More Law Center, which people like you and me, Michael, and our audience are very familiar with, represented several Christian families that filed suit against the Byron Union School District in California to discontinue use of the history textbook and other material and activities that promote Islam at Excelsior Elementary, for example. In a decision that was ultimately upheld by the 9th Circuit, U.S. District Court Judge Phyllis Hamilton dismissed the suit, saying that Excelsior School is not indoctrinating their students in Islam, but rather teaching them about the Muslim religion.
This sounds more like a course on how to become a Muslim.
I guess Judge Hamilton is not acquainted with the First Amendment and the Establishment Clause, which protects students from religious indoctrination in the classroom. Where is the public outcry? If Christian, Jewish, or Hindu practices were taught and practiced in public schools, the ACLU would be screaming to high heaven. If the Lord's Prayer were being taught in schools, or if students were being given communion or being baptized, can you imagine what would happen at school board meetings? Citizens across America should be outraged that this type of education is happening in our public school system.
Well, there's nothing from the mainstream media. How do we get here?
The Islam Project is written by the Council on Islamic Education, CIE, and the Islamic Society of North America, which, by the way, both of these organizations are a front organization for the terrorist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Hmm.
The Islam Project is an initiative in the United States public middle and high schools that incorporate all aspects of Islam, religious, social, spiritual, and political. Shabir Mansour, director of the Council on Islamic Education, stated in 2002 that, quote, "Muslims were here first on American soil since before this nation was founded," end quote.
What?
Tell that to Captain John Smith and crew.
Exactly.
In fact, the Arab World History Notebook, a learning text that was developed by U.S. Islamic groups, such as the Middle East Policy Council, and distributed to teachers across America, says that Muslims were in North America as early as 889 AD. The notebook also states that Muslims married into the Algonquin tribe and became Algonquin chiefs. By convincing Muslims and non-Muslims of all ages that the Americas were inhabited first by Muslims, radical Islamists can unite Muslims and sympathizers in the United States to fight for what they believe is rightfully yours.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
The Council on Islamic Education is frequently consulted by major U.S. publishers of world history and geography school books for grades K through 12. Houghton Mifflin, McGraw-Hill, and Prentice Hall are the three main top publishers of world history textbooks in the United States. Houghton Mifflin's 7th grade social studies textbook, called Across the Centuries, has been a source of controversy among educators for years.
Well, what kind of controversy are you talking about?
Across the Centuries is 558 pages long and covers the 1,500 years history between the fall of the Roman Empire and the French Revolution. the chapter on Islam, Michael, accounts for 10% of the text, while Christianity and Judaism are almost entirely absent. These guys are doing exactly what Hitler did back during the Nazi days. Hitler said, give me your students, and I will take care, I will brainwash them. And this is exactly what's happening, Michael, in our public schools.
This, to me, is like the late 30s all over again.
Is it any wonder why this new generation of Americans are completely brainwashed, are completely sympathetic to Saudi Arabia and Iran and to the Islamic world, and actually some of them turning against the United States? It is mind-boggling what's happening in our school system. The book paints a rosy picture of the tolerance of Islam without mentioning the massacres committed in its name over the centuries. It talks about jihad as a personal struggle instead of explaining that jihad is mentioned in the Quran 40 times, 36 of them as holy war against the infidels.
Well, of course not. It wouldn't be convenient to teach that.
Here is an example of homework assignment. Quote, form small groups of students to build a miniature mosque. Or, quote, assume you are a Muslim soldier on your way to conquer Syria in the year 635 AD. Write three journal entries that reveal your thoughts about Islam, fighting in battle, or life in the desert, end quote. Across the centuries is just one example of textbooks that are sanctioned by state boards of education. I have in my book, They Must Be Stopped, multiple examples of this type of venom and lies that is being taught to our school, to our students across the nation. American students, Michael, are being offered opinions presented as facts. There is no mention in the textbooks of how Sharia law is in direct opposition to constitutional law and Bill of Rights. Nor do the textbooks discuss that under an Islamic government, many of an individual's basic human rights are severely limited and are non-existent. The issue here, Michael, is not teaching about religion. It is appropriate for our schools to teach children in an even-handed and factual way about the major religions in the world, as this is an integral part of world history. The issue is how Islam is often represented in public schools.
Where can we read more?
I urge listeners who are concerned about this issue and want to find out more about it to go to actforamerica.org and sign up to get our information and learn how they can become a voice affecting their community and our nation. Because it's going to take up to the people, Michael, to come together, to educate, to become involved. And this is exactly why we named the organization Act for America. We didn't name the organization Think About America. We didn't name it Hope for America. We didn't name it Wish for America. We named it Act for America.
Thanks for the report, Brigitte.
I want to thank you, Michael, for giving me the opportunity to be with you tonight and to educate your listeners and patriotic American about what's happening in our country and how together we can make a difference for our country. Thank you so much.
The mental disorder called liberalism is destroying our schools and our country. You want to know how we lost our America? Look at our school system. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, what do people have to say about the meltdown of the global warming consensus that never existed? Well, our sex puppy, Al Gore, was very successful, they say. But foreign countries and individuals have also profited handsomely from the American taxpayers. Now, we have a handsome California lawmaker named Henry Wexler trying to double down on this hoax with Obama's blessings. Another reader wrote, the Indian scientist behind this Himalayan meltdown should star in the next remake of The Planet of the Apes. Another one wrote, and now we have full-blown evidence of what happens when the hysteria generated by Al Gore and his Al Gore Qaeda operatives in the wacko environmental movements is released into the world. Death, destruction, and more hysteria. That's what happens when you have a stark-raving, megalomaniacal lunatic like Al Gore running around inciting weak-minded pseudo-intellectuals to stick a wad of dynamite down their breeches and blow up a few fellow parasites. The only sentiment I can drag up is, thank God the shallow end of the gene pool was a little cleaner on his way out. Oh, goodness. Here's another reader's writing about this. The damage done by climate alarmists and opportunists is already bad enough, but can you imagine if it went unfettered? It took us long enough, but glad we are all waking up. And here's another reader. They've been doing it all their lives. It explains why they were so shocked at the outrage and uproar. Why in the world would anyone be upset? After all, they were only doing what they had been taught to do, what was expected of them, no less. Lying to the public to advance political agendas has become the bread and butter of the scientific community, and they know where their bread is buttered. Finally, most normal people with a functioning brain have pretty much figured out by now that man-made global warming is a gigantic hoax. It has been foisted on us by many of our genius politicians and so-called scientists. A gullible and agenda-given media. Actually, scam would be a better choice of words, since lots of people and politicians are trying to make and have made gazillions off this fraud, including one of our illustrious former vice presidents, that ultimate capitalist, Al Gore, all at the expense of the hapless taxpayer and consumer. As usual, this house of cards is collapsing and rapidly. The only thing that is being polluted is the minds of our children, who are still being indoctrinated and propagandized about the fake global warming hysteria in the public school system. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. 1-800-449-8255. If you have an idea for my Tuesday shows, or you want to comment on any of the news stories we touched on, I mean, that's big news coming out of the Middle East. I don't know if you heard any of that. You can call the show, certainly. I have a Woodchuck Bill update. Those of you who were fortunate enough to listen to the Savage Nation heard me replay my Woodchuck Bill story. One of my favorites from childhood, from my book, Psychological Nudity. And I have an update. A cousin of mine wrote and said, he was actually there. He knew him. He was 2 years younger than me. He said, do you remember this story about Woodchuck Bill? I said, no. He said, you remember we once caught an eel in the river? You know, it was up in the country and we used to go fishing and this and that. We caught an eel and we were going to throw it back. And he said, no, don't throw the eel back. That's meat on the table. He ate everything that the woods offered him. And he also told us as little kids, and I didn't know this, that he descended from a Hessian soldier, who had fought with Britain against the United States in the Revolutionary War. So he, you know, imagine that. Could you imagine he knew that he descended from a Hessian soldier, a German, who had come over to fight with the British against George Washington's army in the Revolutionary War. And here he was 10 generations later, living off the land with his wife in the woods of the Catskill Mountains. And I asked myself, I wonder how many of these Hessian descendants are in the Obama administration today. You know, something about Michael Savage brightens the spirit. I am a treasure for hard times. Who said that? Who said, oh, I don't know, I listened to him because something about him brightens the spirit. Michael Savage is a treasure for hard times. Who said that? I said that. Because if I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? And now here's what's on michaelsavage.com, a little wrap-up of the news stories of the day that you may have missed here and there. Always on my website, of course, I direct you there because I can't cover all of these stories. In fact, yesterday I interviewed Rick Santelli of CNBC, and the sound interview is heard on michaelsavage.com. No longer can we let the American dream be trampled, says who? Says Michael Savage. In trickle-up poverty, only on michaelsavage.com. The BBC has admitted a massive leaning to the left. Murkowski's defeat marks a major Tea Party win. An offshore platform has exploded in the Gulf of Mexico. Ratboy, the American Taliban, would like to be able to pray with other Muslims in a group, in their highly restricted cell block. They want to pray as a group. I would say those who pray together might bomb together. Yeah. Senate candidate indicted for sexual conduct with a minor. The ICE group is turning a blind eye to illegal aliens. Obama has revamped the Oval Office, turning it into what looks like a rental in a bad hotel. Mustard corduroy sofas. Boxy modern coffee table look like it came from a remnant sale. And of course, a bust of Churchill is out while MLK is in. Muslims in Paris block streets for weekly prayers. Parisians do nothing. The CEO of Penthouse is putting a fundraiser on for Christ. Obama's health chief wants re-education on Obamacare. Savage honored by The New Yorker. By the way, if you never read that interview, it's still up, as is my interview in Playboy. Man plunges 40 stories, lands on a car, and lives? Mosquito repellent takes swat at loitering teens. That's nice. Obama administration reverses course and bans the sale of South Korean M1 rifles that were used by U.S. soldiers during the Korean War. And finally, on MichaelSavage.com, a Japanese resort attracts men with virtual girlfriends. That's all I can say on that.
Savage.